It is approximately 2 p.m. Central Time on Thursday, November the 7th, 2024. I'm Cassie Brown, and I serve as the Commissioner of Insurance. This hearing concerns proposed rules relating to life, health, and HMO filing procedures. The proposed rules repeal, amend, and add new sections in Chapter 3, Subchapters A, S, and Z, and Chapter 7, Subchapter M, of Title 28, the Texas Administrative Code. The proposed changes to Chapter 3 streamline and modernize the filing processes for life, annuity, accident, health, and HMO products, including form, rate, network, and advertising filings. These rules last underwent significant updates in 2003. The proposed changes to Chapter 7 regarding regulatory fees are necessary to conform to the proposed changes to Chapter 3. Notice of today's hearing was posted on TDI's website and published in the Texas Register on October 4th, 2024. Any member of the public wishing to offer comments should fill out a witness card and submit it to staff at the table. I'll call on you and ask you to identify yourself for the record. I'll begin by calling on Rachel Bowden, Director of Regulatory Initiatives for the Life and Health Division at TDI, to explain the proposal.
Good afternoon, Commissioner Brown. As you said, my name is Rachel Bowden, and I am Director of Regulatory Initiatives for the Life and Health Division at TDI. Staff is before you today to propose rules related to life, health, and HMO filing procedures, which are addressed through repeals, amendments, and new sections within Chapter 3, Subchapters A, S, and Z, and Chapter 7, Subchapter M of Title 28 of the Texas Administrative Code. To simplify filing procedures for carriers and streamline the overall filing process, the proposal makes the following changes. Chapter 3, Subchapter A, which constitutes the bulk of the project, is repealed and replaced with reorganized and modernized standards governing all filings that are submitted to the Life and Health Division through CERF, the System for Electronic Rates and Forms filings. While the repealed sections apply only to insurance rate and form filings, the new proposed sections also apply to HMO rate and form filings and to provider network filings. Chapter 3, Subchapter S, is modified to amend one section and repeal two sections to avoid duplication of plain language and readability standards that are proposed to be included in Subchapter A. Chapter 3, Subchapter Z, is modified by amending three sections addressing life and health exempt filing privileges and repealing one section to avoid duplication of certifications required in Subchapter A. Amendments update the types of filings eligible to be filed exempt to eliminate those that frequently fail audit, and to change the process for canceling an insurer's exempt filing privileges. Chapter 7, Subchapter M, is amended to reference filing fees contained in Chapter 3, Subchapter A, and repeal a section that requires TDI to administer an internal billing system which is no longer needed based on a proposed requirement for issuers to pay fees using the CERF electronic funds transfer system. These proposed rules were published in the Texas Register on October 4, 2024, and consistent with Insurance Code 1201.007, TDI also mailed letters to notify accident health insurers about the hearing on the rule proposals. TDI will take the comments received as well as the testimony today into consideration as the adoption orders for these rules are prepared. Commissioner Brown, the written comment period expired on November 4, 2024. TDI will accept written and oral comments presented at this hearing as stated in the written proposal. Contingent on any comments we receive, staff respectfully requests that you repeal 28 CAP sections 3.1 through 3.8, 3.3101, 3.3102, 3.4020, and 7.1302. Adopt amendments to 28 CAP sections 3.3100, 3.4004, 3.4005, 3.4009, and 7.1301. And adopt new 28 CAC sections 3.1, 3.2, 3.10, 3.23, 3.40, 3.41, 3.50, 3.52, and 3.60 through 3.62. This concludes my presentation. Thank you for your consideration of this proposal, and I will be happy to answer any questions you may have.
All right, I'll call for public comments. I've got two cards up here. First, I'll call on Kevin Stewart. Texas Association of Health Plans.
Hey, thank you. Kevin Stewart, THP. I'm going to be super brief. We just got done with a three-day conference, and thank you to everybody who attended. So I'm still recovering. We did submit comments. I think we sent in a handful of recommendations, most of them pretty straightforward. I think the biggest issue that we have is the third-party bear rules. We're not exactly sure kind of where they came from. You know, I think TDI's had a policy on their website, on their FAQ, about basically plans can only deny a third-party payment if it's sort of built into their policies. We think that's a reasonable policy for the agency to have. We like that policy. You know, we have no problem with y'all codifying that. I think what y'all have proposed looks sort of like the federal rules. Some of the provisions in there look like the federal rules. Other parts don't. They go kind of beyond. But we think just for the sake of consistency across states, and consistency with federal requirements, we think just have, you know, telling plans, hey, look, you can't deny it if you haven't told people in advance that you're going to deny these payments. We think that's the best way to go. A couple other items in there, I'm not going to hit them, but yeah, if you have any questions or concerns about those, just let me know. I think those are more sort of straightforward recommendations and not so much substantive. Thanks.
I'll call on Jim Thompson, Texas Association of Life and Health Insurance. Good afternoon, Commission staff. Pleasure to be here, Jennifer. Sorry she couldn't be here. I'm representing the Texas Association of Life and Health Insurance. We did submit written comments, I believe, on the 4th. And we told our members that we would have an opportunity to add to those if there were any. Please report. We have no additional comments to report verbally today at this hearing. I want to just summarize some highlights of our written comments. I know that you and your staff will go through those thoroughly. One of the recommendations is to perhaps insert an applicability and scope into the rule. I think it's pretty clear what you're doing in the rules that's being repealed. There's language in there that says it applies to filings made on and after the date of the new rules. And the old rules would continue for that. You have a lot of old filings that still may be audited. And I think it's pretty clear that you would need to apply those rules to those filings and not the new rules to an old filing. And I think that would assist both companies and your staff in understanding that, even though I will tell you that it's not always easy to find in the electronic age old rules. I have books in my office that go back to 1909 to find old codes that are hard to find online. And the same is true of rules. You also mentioned the word severability in the title of the opening of new Division 1. You might want to put a severability clause in for any reason there was any challenge. I'm not aware of any, because for the most of our members support this and believes that it will make it easier for both your staff and our the staff that are involved in filings within the insurance company to be able to comply. A couple of things I want to highlight where we did get comments on the definition of blanket policy. Looks like that's changed from the previous rule where it talks about affirmatively enroll or contribute to the premium without individual application or underwriting. Those terms are not used in the statute. Even though that may be something that is done on occasion, we would recommend maybe for uniformity to look at the old definition and keep that. We got a number of comments about the word insert page, the way that's defined in the new rule as compared with the old rules. And I think there was some comments submitted also by ACLI. We have some common members. And we made a recommendation perhaps to look at a revising that definition in some form that would make it easier for companies to comply. I won't go through all of the comments. Some of the comments we had, Commissioner, or questions that we got from members that we included in the comments. And in looking at past rule adoption orders, it appears your staff does a pretty good job of answering questions when those are asked and submitted as written comments. So again, we will rely on that. Again, we had a number of questions in paragraph 3.17 on form and rate filings on paragraph F, where we had several members with comments about multi-product group rules. And the way the rule is worded is subsection A is broadly worded that requires only one product being created in the form of rate filing. Some of our members said that they have some type of products like an accident, death, and disability product that has a term line product in it, and asked the clarification on that to make sure that they could continue to file those as one product, because it would be a multi-product, a term line product with an accident, death, and disability benefit. A lot of questions in subsection F that requires insurers to file a new insert page. Remember, the term insert page is used there. We suggested that that they believe that they should be permitted to do that to inform that the text will be incorporated on new issues, not old policies, but new issues. And they felt that it was not clear because they talked about it. The rule refers to an amendment to a previously used form. So that contemplates that the form is filed, used, sent to the policyholder. And questions as well as that, because I don't think the intent is to amend an existing contract, because I'm not sure that we can do that, but to amend the language on new issues going forward and ask for maybe some clarification there. I talked to Rachel briefly before the hearing today, and we may need to just provide maybe some language that she can review in reviewing that comment if it's not clear. And we'll be happy to do so. In terms of the variable material, we had a number of comments on that and some questions in this area. Particularly, I think we had some comments and questions from members on the compact products that filed in the compact and how this can apply with the wording rule. There's not a lot of cross references there and stuff. And so, there may be multiple some questions that we've tried to identify by specific sections in there. Group filings, I want to mention again on the group filings. I think that we got very positive comments about the changes there that should make that easier. So I really do want to emphasize that we got a number of positive comments in there. There were some clarifications, though, in there, and probably the one that we got the most negative comments was in subsection H, which deals with language that says that an issuer that is licensed, that issues a certificate of insurance in this state that's covering the Texas resident, must certify that it complies with Texas law, even though the group policy may have been issued in another state. I have submitted a number of written briefs in the past to some of your staff, Chris Herrick and others, about this extraterritorial issue and made some specific reference to certain language in the insurance code, particularly in Chapter 1251, dealing with group accident and health policies, where it specifically says that Texas law will apply to the certificate only in very limited circumstances. Otherwise, the law of the state with group policies issue is going to comply with that. So most of our members are very concerned and hope that will be addressed in this, that maybe subsection H will either be deleted or amended. I've included some of the case law that we provided in previous modeling that. That language and the way it's been applied in the past has been too broad. On paragraph 3.23, the proposed rule, if we're notified that the filing is incomplete, we have 2 business days to make a filing or a withdrawal. many members felt that's too short because you could have a person who's working internally within the company that may see that come through on CERB. They may be off for personal vacation or days. That we would suggest that that be amended to 10 days. 10 days is used in other areas of this code, and we think that one provision, 3.23B1, should be amended to 5 or 10 business days. Many of the questions on Section 341 on electronic and telephonic applications, that language may need to be cleaned up a little bit, where it seems to apply that if you're doing a telephone application, which many members do in some types of low amount of life insurance and stuff, they'll get an application by phone. This seems to require some type of written signature or something, and that's inconsistent with doing business in that way, so we're going to ask you to look at that. And also, how do those standards that you've articulated there comply with the interstate company requirements in that area specifically? We mentioned specifically some of the UEDA and ESIDE laws, because I think doing business electronically is often to the benefit of both the consumer and the company. In 3.51, we also mentioned this payment of premiums or cost sharing. Kevin mentioned we have members, some are members of both organizations who have similar concerns. I think the only thing that I would add is that the reason for those provisions in the federal law and in our law is to prevent certain uses by certain types of entities offering to pay less, and your rule just seems to open up to anybody, where it's really more limited on your website and the federal law to prevent those type of abuses. On the exempt forms, I know that Rachel mentioned that some of the products that are being eliminated are products that fail audits. I know that blanket policies are being taken out of that. A lot of our members are expressing concerns about that. I'm not sure if blanket fits into that. Obviously, Rachel will have a better knowledge of that, or why those products may affect a lot of blanket policies, or a lot of policies that, you know, cover someone on a travel or a school program. They don't make an application, they're just covered under that. And I would think that those might be fairly straightforward. Most of our members did request that that continue to be in the exempt form rather than being repealed. A number of our members also had some comments about dental plans that is taken out of the exempt category, and they felt very strongly that a standalone dental plan that doesn't include a PPO or an EPO should be continued to be exempt from filing. Those should not be problematic filings from audits. Obviously, if it involves a PPO or EPO, it raises a lot more deal, and we certainly would understand that being taken out of the exempt status in those type of filings. In short, I think that our written comments, I won't try to repeat those, Commissioner, in respect to your time and those of your staff. We do appreciate the opportunity to submit these and explain some of these today. Meet with your staff, we'll be happy to cooperate and find more of this finalized.
Great. I did have a couple of questions. On your comments on Section 3.17F, your comments state that other insurance departments permit a different approach for insurers to incorporate amendments into previously filed forms. And you suggest that insurers should be permitted to do a couple of things, inform and indicate. So can you provide examples of the other state rules that take this approach?
I can't today, but I certainly can supplement my comments with some examples. I'll check back with the member that provided those comments to me.
Okay.
Because I did not personally look at some of the other laws, but this was a comment that we did receive from some companies on that, where they're using a new form. And I think it also goes back to the, what is an insert page? I think that the recommendation we made is that the definition of insert page should be something that is, you know, a topic, a specific topic, as opposed to the way it's been defined in the rule. And that could cure some of the problems with subsection F, because it does refer to file a new insert page. And I would get the names of the departments specifically that they had in mind in those.
And so you may answer this, just not clearly for me. So when looking at a page of a form that has been revised to incorporate an amendment, would the form include both the original form number and the form number of the amendment that has been incorporated?
Should, probably. It's amending a form that's been previously approved. I would think that it would be helpful to your staff, and our members should be able to know that if a form has been approved, that they're amending that text for future, then that's the only amendment they should be able to.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? So if we could get the state names today, that would be wonderful, since the comment period ends at 5 o'clock today. And we'll be
able to I'll do my best.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate the comments.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Would anybody else like to comment? Okay. Let the record reflect that all those desiring to comment have now done so. The Chapter 3 and Chapter 7 proposed rules were published in the Texas Register on October 4th, 2024. TDI will consider all written comments received by 5 p.m. Central Time today and the testimony given today before preparing adoption orders for this rulemaking. I want to thank you all for coming out to this hearing. The hearing for docket number 2815 is adjourned.